Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Time now to look at some stories from other parts of the world that normally don't get that much coverage around here. Jonathan DeBurka Butler is here to guide us once again. Australia, we're going to first. This chap was a hero just a few weeks ago, and now he's in trouble himself.
Yeah, so this is Ahmed Al-Ahmed, a 44-year-old who most people will know. If they don't know him by name, they'll know him by his deeds. He was the man who probably stopped what already was a massacre from becoming an even bigger massacre. So this was at Bondi Beach when the attacks happened during a Hanukkah event and 15 people were killed. And most people who've seen the video footage will remember that this guy, Ahmed, he crept up behind one of the shooters at the event, Sajid Akram, and he tackled him and disarmed him. Now, he was very badly injured in that himself, the 44-year-old tobacconist is what he works as, actually. Shot in the arm and in the shoulder, and he was in hospital, and he was you know, treated as a hero. The Prime Minister Anthony Albanese went along and visited him. He got a huge response at the final Ashes test between England and Australia in cricket. You know, the whole stadium stood up to him. A GoFundMe page was put together for him, and it raised something like $2.6 million for him. Right,
whoa.
So. It was a lot of money, but since then he seems to have had a bit of trouble, and the cause of that trouble seems to be this money. So he appeared in court just last week, and he's accused basically of putting his father in a headlock at his home or at a house on the 9th of March of this year, right? So he's been charged. He was charged last Wednesday with common assault and also stalking or intimidating either member of his family or members of his family. Now, it's all a bit strange because he came out, he was very upset after he was charged, obviously, saying that it's untrue. And he did a radio with a local station in Sydney, a talk radio station called 2GB. And during that interview, the host of the show, Ben Fordham, seemed to agree with his innocence or his pleas of innocence. He says, "I don't believe your brothers. I don't believe your dad. I don't believe any of them." And actually, if you dig a little bit deeper into it, it seems that the charges against Al-Ahmed came 2 days after two of his younger brothers faced court for charges of their own, which involved using a carriage service, i.e. a phone, to harass their older siblings. Apparently, they were harassing him and asking for $100,000. So there seems to be a family feud going
about
on here.
The money,
about the money, unfortunately.
So,
and it's all got a bit out of control.
And he's denying that he assaulted his father at all.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. The police were responding to what they say was a report of an assault happening at this house on the 9th of March. Now, I don't know at this stage who the witnesses were, who saw what, and exactly what happened. But this hero slash former hero, who knows what's going to happen to him, seems to be in a little bit of trouble, and he has to go back to court now in July to face those charges. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, and if something happens to the brothers in the meantime. Horrible story.
Yeah, that's it's very sad.
Yeah,
that reduce a family to that. Right, Nigeria. We're going to go to next, and I think people will probably remember this case when it initially happened. The attack.
Yeah,
it was some years back now.
Yeah, this was back in 2022 when 41 worshippers were killed in a church in the state of Ondo. So Ondo's in the southwest, they say, but it's not really. It's more south central, a little bit over to the west. But it's got a population of about 5 million people in it, so it's relatively big. There's a split there in terms of religions, okay?
Yeah.
So the majority would be Christians, but there's a very strong Muslim population there of about 2 million as well, and a small Catholic population of about a quarter of a million, right? So the reason I'm putting that is just to put it into context, because we know that, you know, there's a lot of sort of inter-ethnic problems and inter-religious problems in Nigeria at the moment, right? And they sort of seem to be getting worse. And then, of course, Trump is jumping on this as well. So anyway, this case, as I said, goes back to 2022. These 41 worshippers were killed, and four men now, as a result, have been sentenced to death for that attack in this particular church. Now, the death sentence is not something, okay, it's fairly common as a sentence,
yeah,
but it's quite rarely carried out. And,
yeah,
and again, just to tell you, there's about 3,500, excuse me, people on death row at the moment in Nigeria, okay? But the last execution actually happened in December of 2016 when three inmates were executed. And before that, I think it was 2013. So not very common. It's likely that these four men will appeal. In fact, we know that they will. Mm. Whether they're going to appeal the convictions or not, I'm not sure, but they're certainly going to try and appeal the sentences.
And the fact that executions are carried out, is that because they're on death row and they're stuck in an endless loop of appeals?
Yeah,
and
that kind of stuff is part of it for sure. Yeah. And there is a kind of a de facto moratorium there. They don't like doing it. They haven't changed the law, but they don't really like doing it.
These four men, were they part of an organisation or a militant group, or what spurned them to do it?
Yeah, so they were part of a militant group, and in fact they have been charged and sent to prison on top of the death sentences for 20 years for being members of a terrorist organisation. Now, of course, they deny the charges, and they say that when they were arrested, they were beaten and tortured and had their genitals, they were electrocuted, hung from the ceiling, all sorts of different things. So they're denying these completely. And one aspect of it is quite interesting in that there was a fifth defendant who was actually acquitted. He apparently was looking after the money side of things.
Oh.
But the judge decided that there wasn't enough evidence against him. And so he was acquitted. It was motivated by religion, this particular attack.
Yeah. Now, this fifth chap got off, the four have been sentenced to death. Is that it? Are they looking for anyone else in connection with this?
There is another person involved who apparently raised the money. So the money man who got off the hook, or was innocent, I should say, he's been acquitted, was the middleman.
Yeah.
All right. But there is a sixth person that they're looking for. Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay. Right. Japan, we're going to go to next. And this is, I suppose, the unexpected side effects of war. The Iran war is resulting in a shortage of plastic objects.
Yes, plastic bags.
Yeah.
So takeaways and supermarkets and bakeries are running out of plastic bags, trays, plastic gloves. You know, they're very hygienic in Japan, and they, you know, like, don't like handling their food without gloves. So they're in a bit of a panic, and that's because a key ingredient in the production of plastic, a thing called naphtha, which is not a single chemical, but is a mix of hydrocarbons. Luke O'Neill is outside, so I'm being influenced, inspired by him. There's none around, basically, right? So they get this from crude oil, and the vast majority of their crude oil imports come from the Middle East, and of course come through the Strait of Hormuz, right? So the Japan Petrochemical Industry Association has said that production of polyethylene, which comes from this naphtha stuff, which is used in the production of shopping and garbage bag, was down by 62% in March. And as a result, they can't make these bags anymore or plastic products. So there's a shortage and people are panicking. And I think one of the most interesting stories was, and I put a picture of it up on my Instagram page, @DeBurkaButler, is that there's a potato chip company, or we call them crisps here, called Calbee. And they're known for their brightly coloured bag designs, but they've decided that they're going to take those bag designs and put them into monochrome, because this stuff also makes printing ink and they don't have enough and it's costing them too much. So they've gone from these brightly coloured bags to black and white bags, and they look awful, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And it's very strange.
Is this something that is exercising the Japanese public much?
It seems to be. I saw that there was an opinion poll somewhere that showed that the public see this issue as one of its most pressing worries. First world problems. And the Prime Minister has had to get involved. The government has assured the public, saying that it's not a supply issue, but it's a bottleneck issue rather than a shortage, which sounds like a massive fudge to me. But anyway, maybe they bought themselves a couple of days. But it's starting to play out in with rubbish bags and everything. So municipalities, you know, the way you'd sort the stuff out in your different coloured bins. Well, they have different coloured bags over there in some places. And people are panicking, going to the shops, buying loads of these bags because they think they won't be able to put the rubbish out and sort the rubbish properly. So they've had to limit the number of bags in some places that can be sold to people. Some new municipalities have even gone so far as to say, throw it in whatever bag, we'll still take it away, don't worry.
Is this just particular to Japan, this problem, or these shortages we're seeing elsewhere?
Apparently not. Apparently it's happening right throughout Asia and parts of Asia. South Korea, there was a run on bags as well in Seoul. And they had to put limits on that as well. And the government, just like the Japanese, had to issue reassurances that everything was fine. But they use a huge amount of plastic bags. I was looking at the stats around this, right? And South Korea and Japan, depending on what reports you look at, but they appear in the top five or top 10 plastic users in the world. So they use a lot of it, apparently, although they're very low when it comes to rubbish. So they use a lot of it, but they recycle a lot of it as well. So there you go.
That's interesting, apart from their bags, of course. Right, Jamaica we're going to go to next, and a policeman has been charged with a murder.
Yeah, which apparently doesn't happen very often, even though the murder police shootings are very high. I'll give you some statistics in a few minutes, right? So this is a individual by the name of Constable Andrew Wilson, okay? And he was involved in a shooting in a town called St. James. I think it's in the northwest of the island. God, it's really simple. It has echoes of that woman who was shot in I can't remember the state now, in North America. She was this woman, the victim in this case, is Latoya Bulgin. She was a 45-year-old woman, and she was actually at a protest because her cousin had been shot by a policeman. A 17-year-old boy had been shot a couple of days previously, and she was at this protest. She was parked by the side of the road. She was letting people out of her car. And then she moved just to, you know, take off or whatever, okay? And there was a cop standing in front of her. They were all monitoring what was going on around these protests. And the policeman just took out the gun and shot her, more or less point blank, from a distance, as you were
right,
close
okay.
to me.
Right, okay. Oh, I know the one you're talking about, the woman at the, Renee, what's her
was
name?
It Michigan,
the ice,
was it?
Yeah, the
in
ice
Michigan,
protests.
Sorry.
Yes,
It was very similar to that.
Yeah.
It's scary how similar it was to that. But what's worse here is that the police, they took her body out of the car, put it onto the ground, and then they put it into the back of a police pickup truck, right? Now, an independent investigation has been launched here, and the footage seems to suggest that they didn't help. They didn't administer first aid or see was she okay when they put her on the ground. They just took her out of the thing, dumped her in the back of their own Jeep, and only for the fact that this had been recorded by another protester, was it actually seen, has it been seen in the public domain?
They don't
domain?
Wear body cams.
That's
there.
One of the big problems. Yeah. They don't have body cams there. And this is something that they've been calling for, various organisations have been calling for years. So this guy has been caught, luckily, I suppose, and he is going to be charged with murder. He has been charged with murder.
Yeah, and you said the stats aren't great in relation to this kind of thing there.
So far this year, there have been 140 fatal police shootings in Jamaica, right? Last year, there was 311. The population of Jamaica is 2.3 million.
Wow.
Huge.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's a massive proportion. Right, that's very interesting. Right, finally, we're going to go to Canada. This is a strange one. Cricket in Canada and organized crime.
Well, the first thing
Who
is
knew?
Cricket in Canada.
Yeah, it's all.
But when you think about it, one of the biggest Indian populations outside of India lives in Canada.
There's
3 million Indians live there or of Indian descent, right? So it's growing in popularity there. So that's one of the reasons, right? Even the president of Cricket Canada, who again we'll talk about in a minute, he is of Indian background, okay? So it's growing in popularity, but there seems to be a problem, and that problem has led to the suspension of Cricket Canada by the International Cricket Council, the ICC, right? So there was a recent TV investigation done by a program called the Fifth Estate, right? It's like CBC's prime time there or whatever, okay? And they found that there were, the investigation found that there was corruption, coercion, and evidence of match fixing going on there. And what seems to be at the root of this is a gang called the Lawrence Bishnoi Gang, which is a transnational syndicate, which is run from a prison in Delhi, would you believe?
Wow.
But they're involved in the match-fixing side of it. So it seems that they have infiltrated this organisation, Cricket Canada, at the highest level and also at the player levels. And they've basically threatened them to try and fix matches so these guys can go and bet on games that cricket, that the Canadian cricket team are involved in, and win money. Right, so that's one strand of it. So with these accusations, the International Cricket Council kind of looked at this and they said, right, back in May, which is only last month, they froze the funding for Cricket Canada, which amounted to about 60% of the total funding that it gets. But then it said, okay, look, we're going to take this even further, and we're actually going to suspend you as part of the group of organisations within the ICC. And they're looking into them, and they're basically saying, look, there's ways that you can get back. You need to do this. You need to do this. Your audits are wrong. Your books are all over the shop. Root and branch reorganization.
Yeah, but was there evidence of completely competent cricket players going, oh, I dropped the ball, and
there was one. I don't know the exact situation, but there was a game against New Zealand in February where a player made an error in the opening part of the game, apparently, and the ICC kind of looked at it and went, oh, that's a bit funny. And so he was questioned over match fixing. Now, I don't know how far that investigation has gone yet, but one insider in that Fifth Estate investigation said that, players were being fast-tracked through the team that weren't necessarily as good as they should be to get into that team.
There's
ideas that they were being threatened and families being threatened. Just to finish on this, just before I came in, the president of Cricket Canada had his home shot at the end of last month.
Wow.
So this is getting very serious. That's actually the second time that it's happened. So a big story.
Right. So what a big story should we look out for over the next few days?
Yeah, a few things coming up. I think tomorrow Bill Gates is being interviewed as part of the congressional Epstein investigation. So that'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
Just in time for Donald Trump's birthday on the 14th, which is on Sunday. It's going to be 80, would you believe?
Woo-hoo!
So no doubt you have the cake ready.
I'll bring the candles, Sean, and the beers, and we'll celebrate that. Try and keep them awake during the party. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Thanks,
as ever.
Sean.
Jonathan DeBurca Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.